Welcome to the Gen AI special of Adesso IT Tacheles podcast. This is all about generative AI and the opportunities this technology offers companies. Today, Nate Jones and I will talk about how we will be developing software in 2030. And we'll try to give a view into the crystal ball. And so that you know who you're dealing with, let's briefly introduce ourselves. My name is Benedikt Baumann and I'm an executive board member at Adesso, where I'm leading our Gen AI business, among some other things. Nate, so maybe you introduce yourself. Give us 3 to 4 sentences about you.
I'm Nate. I've been kicking around in tech for a couple of decades now. I've sat in a lot of the chairs in business. So I've been a founder. I've been in product management. I've also been in marketing. And I've done a few other roles as well. Lately, I've become known across the internet as sort of the AI guy. I ended up starting a small TikTok channel that became not so small. And I've really just been charting. Yeah, I've just been charting my journey as we all move into this world of generative AI faster than I think many of us expected.
Yeah. So that was a fun fact. Actually, we already knew you from the TikTok channel. So how did you come across the idea to start a TikTok channel for AI?
Well, it was one of those things where I realized that I learn better when I talk about what I'm learning. And so it started as a simple experiment to speak about what I'm learning, to speak from a technical perspective, since I'd built AI systems before. But of course, that was prior to generative AI really becoming mainstream. And as I just spoke about what I was learning, people began to listen. And I was as surprised as anybody.
Yeah. So maybe that's something we can all learn. Yeah, TikTok is also a good channel for business parts, not only the LinkedIn.
Yeah, it can be.
Yeah. So yeah, I think we have all major shifts in the software development and Gen AI path. And especially when we look into the future, try to get a view into the crystal ball. So what's your perspective on how are we going to build software in 2030?
I think it starts with the idea that we have intelligent partnership available in AI that wasn't there before. Now, we can put a lot of caveats on that. That's not necessarily something where I'm going to come and tell you that AI agents are ready today to do the work of senior developers, for example. Hmm. But I read just last night that 50% of the code at Google is now being written by AI. And there are
this number is changing, isn't it? Last week I read it's 25%, now it's already 50.
Yeah, well, the 25 or 30% came from a publicly stated figure in a quarterly earnings call couple of months back. And so, yes, it is changing very rapidly. It's growing. What I understand, though, is that the way they're defining that is very strict and allows them to count a lot of almost autocomplete suggestions from AI. And because code is a very structured language, you can get some very effective autocompletes that way. Regardless, I think what it calls out is that our world and how we develop and how we build software is changing very rapidly, and we have this additional intelligence that wasn't available to us even a couple of years back. And that's where I start from when I think about the software of 2030, is that we're going to be deep into that world, and we'll be not only building it from that perspective, but we will be, as we've talked about, I think, assuming that AI is also going to be a reader and user of the software. Hmm. And that will be another major shift.
Yeah. So being a reader of the software, so how do you mean it? Like accessing the UI or like checking the code?
Both.
Yeah.
I mean that AI may be involved in both checking the code and validating it, and also that from a software usage perspective, you may have AI with a separate set of permissions. Maybe the AI can only read the dashboard and come back to you with updates that are relevant. Or maybe in some cases, the AI is permitted to write and actually make changes in your data systems based on that software.
Hmm. And how do you see that on the perspective on when the AI comes into place and consumes the APIs or the UI of the software? via agents, I would guess. So what does that change?
It changes a lot. It changes where humans put their attention. Really, that's a lot of what this shift is about. It's about humans shifting from having to be the only intelligence in the business to humans picking a role that has very high judgment, where they are going to be involved in only those matters that they need to be involved in order for the business to run well. And so you will see a lot of routine tasks that are fairly low judgment, where an AI will pick it up, will do it, and all you'll do is hit, yep, that's I approve that, right? Or that looks good to me, and move on with the day. And I think that workflow will continue to evolve as agents get more capable. But at the end of the day, the core concept is that our judgment and taste is going to come more to the foreground. And a lot of the tasks that previously we had to do because there was no one else that could do that cognitive labor, AI can pick up those tasks now.
Mm-hmm. And I totally have the same perspective when we look at, let's say, company processes. So the old low-code, no-code offerings and also the automatization offerings, they are hitting a new stage with this Gen AI path. But looking at the user experience at the customer front, the CX experience, basically, does that change when you look at the idea that someone has a digital coworker, an agent who accesses, I don't know, the bank or whatever, on the client side, and it's an external agent? What's your perspective? Do you think we're getting this?
I think that we are likely to get this when major model makers can solve for memory. Mm-hmm. I think one of the big challenges right now is that AI has, I think the technical term that I heard kicking around was anterograde amnesia, which is a fancy way of saying it forgets, and you have to start the conversation over. And as long as that is the case, the relative value of someone bringing in an AI agent that they have worked with personally or that they know or that knows them well is not going to be super high. And people may still use their personal AI, but only because of IT security policies. It won't really be because there's tremendous upside for them in terms of the value the AI brings. But when we get to a point where we have some degree of very useful memory from an AI and it's worked with you for a while, and I know that's absolutely the direction OpenAI that in particular is moving, you are going to see a situation where someone will say, why should I have to use your instance of OpenAI, or why should I have to use your particular large language model? I've been working with, you know, my ChatGPT since college. It knows me really well. We are very effective together. It's my personal operating system. Of course I want to bring it. And that's a new challenge for security teams.
So that's even the next level. That would be bring your own agent to work, huh?
Yeah. I think we're going to start to see that before 2030.
Oh, wow. I'm not sure if that's fast, because I think the companies will have a lot of adjustments to do, because or more probably they'll try to bring own agents to life, which then adopt your brain or get to the knowledge, but then you have a hard exchange on that path, huh?
You do, because everyone has different incentives there. Like, the company wants the agents to be company run, and the individual wants the benefits of their individual agents. And so it's going to be a bit of a market conversation back and forth to see how that all shakes out.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see how that goes. So I truly believe that the UI is going not to vanish, but it's going to be less necessary or less relevant for software, because agents will do a lot of the work, and obviously they don't need an UI and are better helped off with APIs. So what's your perspective on that? Are we going to lose the UIs completely or just a bit?
I don't think we will lose the UIs completely. And the reason why is that user interfaces evolved from industrial control interfaces. And the idea was that you needed to do a task precisely over a long period of time and correct it and adjust it as needed. I don't think that need for precision is going to disappear. In fact, I think it will grow. And so in that sense, UIs are a very useful way to ensure that you can precisely adjust as needed. So even in a world where agents do much of the work, you still need the quality of the UI to be very high so you can make those precise adjustments. But there will be lots of disintermediation, which is a fancy way of saying lots of the agent getting in the middle and getting in between the UI and the user. I had that experience myself just yesterday. I was using the new browser that Perplexity.ai launched called Comet. And my assumption was it was a web browser, right? And yeah, maybe they put some AI features in, but I was somewhat skeptical. It is a remarkably useful general purpose agent assistant that they are disguising as a browser. And so what I found was that they have done a great job with the user interface. They have given you most of the browser just as you always enjoyed it in Chrome. It's going to look exactly the same. And then there's a pane on the left and you're chatting with the assistant. And a lot of people assume you chat with the assistant, you will only chat about the web page you're on. And that has limited utility because it turns out you can also read the page you're on, which most people do by default. And so the browsers that start with that assumption fail. But what Perplexity gets right is they get you during onboarding to immediately hook up the data connections to the assistant right from the start. And so they say, hook in your LinkedIn, hook in your Gmail, hook in your calendar. And you do that. And then it becomes a truly personal assistant. So I was able to be looking at a different web page to remember I had a meeting coming in an hour that I couldn't make, type in a message to the assistant and say, hey, can you find my meeting with so-and-so? And can you move it to next Tuesday? And the assistant came back and said, I found the meeting. Here's the meeting. This is a proposed slot next Tuesday that is inside a meeting block, so it's not just isolated. Now, it doesn't leave you buffered. Do you want a little bit of buffer? It acted like an assistant. It was very, very helpful. And then that's cool. Yeah, that's great. And it just took care of it right there.
Yeah, and that's just in July 2025. So in the speed we had in the last months or most probably 2-3 years, we can imagine that in 2030 it's going to be way, way far. Okay, and when we got to know each other, you told me about the LLM first documentation stuff. I really enjoyed that one. Maybe you give us an idea on why should we do that and how are companies leveraging that already?
I think we need to get ready for a world where large language models are our first readers, where we need to assume that 90% of the attention that is available in the world is AI attention. And if that's the case, we should be writing in such a way that AI can easily consume it. And that's where the foundation of that shift comes from. And so part of what moving to a simpler documentation style does is it makes it easier for an LLM to consume. And so I think the example I gave you was from Stripe, where they shifted their documentation to LLMs.txt. It was a markdown format that's very easy for AI to read. And that's quite simply self-interested for them because they know that there are LLMs in coding environments that have access to the internet and access to their documentation while developers are building integrations for Stripe. They want those integrations to succeed, so they want the documentation that the AI brings in to be useful, correct, accurate, up-to-date, and so on. And so it makes sense for Stripe to lead the way here, but I think Stripe will not be the only one. There are a lot of other interest in how we shift the language of the web towards something that is more LLM friendly. Or at least has a variant that is more LLM friendly.
Yeah. If I translate it to, let's say, a consumer product, I get my new mobile phone or my new, I don't know, laptop or whatever it is, and I don't get the documentation anymore, or more like a QR code where I can download an LLM first PDF or even have the chatbot there available, and I'm just asking how do I install it, and I get the answer, and it doesn't just give me the overall installation path, but more I can ask. I'm in the US, I have this and this, and this is my network connectivity. Can I run it on a Wi-Fi 6 or so and get the right answers besides reading through the documentation? Huh?
I already do that for fixing my electronics at home. I take a picture of it and I chat with ChatGPT about it and I ask questions about my particular environment. It's very useful.
Yeah, but the shift comes when the provider or the producer of the product really changed their way, huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that will come slowly as consumer behavior changes across the large distribution of the population. And I think that's one of the things I keep trying to remember is that what's normal for me is not normal for everyone.
Yeah.
And there will take some time for people as a whole to get to this point. But I do think that there's going to be an acceleration driven by the generational shift as the boomer generation exits the workforce and Gen Z enters the workforce. Mm. Because Gen Z and Gen Alpha behind them have never known a world professionally without ChatGPT in it. My kids, Gen Alpha, have never known a world without ChatGPT.
Yeah, the like, same it's just with my kids. They are talking to
everywhere.
Alexa at home, and sometimes he even says, "Dad, you don't know that. Just ask ChatGPT. He knows."
I get the same thing. Have you asked ChatGPT, Dad?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just normal.
But I'm
them.
The superhero,
they just expect
right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's a weird world.
And if we look at this, so we've been building in our digitalization and transformation paths with big clients a lot of, let's say, digital customer platforms like portals where you can access the download of your documents, etc., etc. And if we look at this and we take the personal agent, which knows you by college, into that, do I need to make my portal agent ready already now, or when is the time for that?
I think that the time or the trigger for building an agent these days, it comes back to what I like to call the toothbrush test. Are you solving a problem that has to happen just about every day and the problem has real value to solve? If that's true, then it makes sense now to start to invest in an agent to figure out how to help you do the job well. As long as you can define, you know, what is the agent able to read? What is the agent able to access? What is the quality control on the agent? All of the things that go in with building good software now. If it's more speculative, if you touch it less often, if the value is less clear, most of the time that's a situation where companies end up regretting their agent investments.
Do you have a good idea or a good example of a company or something you already know? Productive?
That's using agents.
Mm-hmm.
There are agents at work everywhere at larger companies. So Uber uses a lot of them. Uber has openly disclosed that they use the LangChain Foundation for the agents that they work on at Uber. Another example would be agents that are being used at Amazon for all kinds of dispatch, for inventory, for warehousing, etc. Amazon's been a leader in machine learning for a long time. And of course, having AI in the workplace is just very normal there and has been for a decade. And so I think you see these big companies doing a lot of work in that direction. I think what's newer is that companies that are not as large are also finding ways to bring agents into the workplace. So for example, a lot of founders, a lot of CEOs are using Lindy.ai, Lindy.ai, because it provides a box of 70 or 80 agents that are designed specifically to support professional workflows, specifically to support executive workflows. And they don't have to build them, and Lindy will get on a call with you and onboard you, and it's very, very easy. And so even if your particular developer team isn't building agents, the agents are still coming into the workplace, and developer teams tend to be building agents that are specific to individual companies.
Yeah. I can imagine on that path, but still on at least on the European side, we'll have a lot of data protection issues with that. Mm-hmm. So who takes care that Lindy doesn't know my business details and so? So that's something we need to figure out for the whole agent path, because the, let's say, the authorization authentication paths, this is still, although we have the MCP, the A2A, it's still a bit unclear to me how this is going to be all figured out, because the complexity will grow into almost infinity.
I don't think GDPR ever anticipated a world of agents. And I think that's part of the fundamental issue. And as we live into that world, but the regulation remains present, I think that there needs to be, like, there's actually a real opportunity for a middleware layer that helps EU businesses to understand the compliance opportunity, the risk that they have in a particular situation, and how a particular architecture of AI can be compliant in the EU environment. Because I typically find when I dive in with EU businesses that there's absolutely a way to do this that's compliant with GDPR. It's just a matter of understanding at root where the agents are instantiated and where the data is at rest, and make sure that the data is not in transit other places. And I've yet to run across a situation where that's just impossible and you can't do it. But it does take extra thought.
Yeah, yeah. I agree on that. And maybe two other points. So one story was you told me that from Shopify, they actually just allow AI, not agents, but let's say AI skilled people, AI natives, to apply for any job in the company. Why do they do that?
So it was just a post that I saw ran across on a social network. The idea was that anyone at the company can apply for an AI automation engineering position. And what we mean by that is that AI automation engineering is so valuable that it can go to any role. And so I think Zapier did that as well. And the idea is every single role is an AI role now. Every single role is an AI first role. And if you had to pick a particular quality in an employee in a given role, at the top of the list would be the ability to automate with AI, because that would enable them to be so much more productive at the rest of their job. And that's really the heart of that desire to bring in more AI skills across the business. I don't know how successful that's going to be. We're all going to find out together. But that was the idea.
Yeah, I really think it's a cool idea. And also when you know your agent and you bring your own agent to work, most probably you need to send your agent to the first interview for future.
You may. I would not be surprised to see AI agents in interviews on both sides in the next 3 or 4 years. And I think that there's going to be a real push and pull in the market between we want to do things efficiently and we want the agents to take the first rounds, and no, we want to have a human conversation so we know who we're hiring.
Hmm. And what's your perspective on enterprise software? So not the consumer-oriented way, enterprise software. How is the, let's say, the saving of hours or in percentage in 2030? How fast will it be?
I would fully expect that we will see, at a minimum, 2x more efficient software by 2030. And so you should be able to get twice as much done in 2030 as you would get done now in an enterprise context. And to me, that feels very conservative. Like, looking at the pace that AI is developing at, it feels like we're going to probably be in a world that's even more efficient than that. The key constraint at that point is going to be human attention, human judgment, human willingness to engage with a particular topic or subject matter. It's the human bottleneck. And that's not going away. Our attentions are not magically becoming 2x by 2030. Yeah. And so we need to design interfaces that enable us to process the right information, the right signal at the right time, so that we are putting our judgment where it matters most. And I think that's going to be one of the big challenges for enterprise software designers in the next 5 years.
So right now we have multiple benchmarks measured throughout the whole world, and it says something between 15 and 25% between non-AI assisted coding. So this would be another 80% absolutely on top, which would mean you need the half of the developers. So what's the perspective for a job as a developer?
I actually disagree with you. I don't think you need half the developers. I think you probably end up writing twice the software.
Yeah, that would be the good part for that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you end up writing more software. It's one of those things where people have been forecasting the death of developers since I've been in tech. And there have been different technologies given as the reason. And it's never come true. Yeah. And I have never seen an appetite for technical skills like I see now. So many of these vibe coding projects end up not reaching production because someone lacked software engineering skills to understand how an application works. I teach courses, and it is difficult to make an effective application if you don't know what a database is and how database architecture goes together. And so many people, this is the first time they're hearing about this, and their eyes kind of glaze over. But like a good software engineer is going to be really useful in understanding the structure of the code, understanding how it fits together, understanding which modules are appropriate for AI to work in versus not, etc.
Yeah, that's the low code, no code paradigm. And from the last 10 years, they always said, okay, it's going to vanish, but still we needed more of the developers. Yeah. I agree on that, and I also see the big backlogs in digitalization at all big companies and all that stuff. It's not going to vanish, and
agreed. A really good call out, because AI agents in the workplace, in developer environments specifically, are often being used for the backlogs. They're being used for the things that nobody had time for before, and now we have time for it because the AI can do it.
Yeah. Most probably that's the good point, huh? And if we look for the outlook, so what's your baseline for the people for the future? Should we all be scared about losing jobs, or what's your perspective?
I don't think so. I see this as very similar to previous technical transitions. I think there will be job types that disappear, and I think there will be new job types that appear. And I think that the best thing that individuals can do to prepare for the future is to lean into understanding how AI works, to understanding how AI works in their domain, and to preserve a human passion for the problems that they're solving. Because one thing that I think we didn't get a chance to touch on the vending machine story, but one thing that the AI vending machine story shows us is that AI does not have passion for problem spaces built in. There's no skin in the game, as we say in America. And so if you don't have that passion for the problem space, you don't end up building amazing companies. And I've been thinking a lot about that this week. I feel like that's something that Steve Jobs would have really resonated with at Apple. You need to have passion to build amazing companies. And I'm long on humans having passion for problems. And so I think, as much as, yes, get fluent in AI, don't forget that you're the one that bring that heart, you bring that long-term focus on the problem space to the workplace. And that's, nobody's replacing that.
Yeah. And I believe when I started my professional career, as I was, let's say, in my youth, I was today we would say script kiddie, doing some hacking stuff here and there, writing some programs there. You sometimes can do magical things, for people who are not that fluent with computer stuff, let's say it that way. You can write a script and then it's done in 10,000 times. And I think we'll have the same here. The guys who know about AI and are capable of leveraging it for their daily job, being it an agent, being it a vibe code, being it a new application for something, they'll make a huge difference in productivity compared to the ones who are not capable of using it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's going to count for people and companies. Yeah.
It will. It's going to be a huge difference, and it will shape career trajectories.
Yeah, Nate, we're already coming to an end for the time. I just got the notice from Andreas here. So, So thank you very much for being here and giving us a great vision for the next 5 years. I really love the examples you brought in here, and let's see if I have to bring my agent to any interview in the future.
Well, I'm sure it will say good things about you if you do.
Yeah, because I'll get the right prompt to him. Huh?
That's right. Well, people are already doing that, so we're going to see more and more of that coming up.
Okay. Thank you very much, Nate.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. And as always, we're giving some notes in the sublines here under www.adesso.de/generative-ai.